As you are aware, we are studying the sixth chapter of Bhagavad Gita, which is known as the chapter for practice, also known as chapter about contemplation and meditation, Dhyana Yoga as well as Abhyasa Yoga. Abhyasa means you have to keep on practicing these things, and then only gradually one understands these principles and experiences them. So, we saw in the last class the great importance of having this self-confidence. We saw that Vedanta tells that you are responsible for whatever is happening. Don't try to lay blame on somebody else. And there you will be able to see that you need to cultivate your hidden powers. If you depend on somebody else, that this person is responsible for my such being in such bad shape, then you have no now means to correct it, because that person is responsible. You have no control over that person, so you cannot really redeem yourself then. But if you understand this, that you are responsible, then you can take up that responsibility on your own shoulders, and you can develop your powers through that. So, Lord said that your own mind is your friend as well as enemy. Don't look for friends outside. I mean, there are great friends outside you can find, but all of that depends on your mind. If your mind is your friend, then other friends make sense. If your mind is not your friend, then everybody else is also, even whether externally friendly or not, become inimical to you. And therefore, this is a great secret to learn, that our mind is the best friend and worst enemy. And when is it the best friend? When it is controlled. All our powers are in the mind. When it is under control, then it is our best friend. If it is not under control, there is no enemy worse than this mind. Therefore, the onus is on us, friends. It is for us to determine that I will change myself. I will take up this challenge to make my life better. If I am not going to do it, who else is going to do for me? Therefore, this thought is put in, and especially we can see the psychology of presenting these ideas here, because now we'll begin the discussion on how we can control the mind. The mind needs to be brought under control. But how? We all have this problem that the mind doesn't remain under control. So we have to find out a way to bring it under control. We all feel the need sometimes or the other to bring the mind under control. But firstly, do not know the right technique. Secondly, we are not committed to put in the efforts. It requires a lot of persevering efforts with dogged determination. Then only it is possible that we will be able to gradually bring the mind under control. So this idea is given here that you can do it. Instead of sitting and crying in the name of some god sitting somewhere in the heaven, and then debating whether it is seventh heaven or eighth heaven, it doesn't help us at all. All those gods are sitting right within us. And let us awaken them, and we will see that helps us to gradually bring our wavering mind under control. So, he said there that when you understand that this mind is coming under control, that is the incoming three verses, Lord has shown the signs of it. Why the signs are shown? Because these signs, they indicate what is the meaning of having the mind under control. If a person is alive or dead, there are signs, you know, the doctor will see, he will open the eyelid and see there is any movement there or not, and to find out one of the ways that if the person is alive, there will be some sign of it in the eye, will put finger there whether to see there is breathing going on or not, will see the pulse if there is pulse or not. So all these different signs are there. If a person is alive, then you will see these signs manifesting there. If not, then the person is dead. Like that story of the parrot that I had told some time back, that a king had the parrot, and then he used to love that parrot so much, he told all the servants, take good care of the parrot. If the parrot dies, then all of you will be given death punishment. And they were scared, they were taking good care of the parrot, but one day the parrot, now everything is subject to birth and death, that parrot breathed its last. And now how to convey the news to the king? The one who brings the news will now be killed there. So, the minister was very wise, he said, don't worry, I will take the news to the king. And he told king, just about your parrot, how is my parrot? Oh, he's fine, you know, wow, wonderful. So serene a face. Serene, okay, good. Sound is it? It is making sound? No, today it is in the, it has assumed just that calm position, no sound at all. Did it eat anything today? No, it is on fast, it seems. Like great yogi, it is on fast, not. In fact, it seems that it has controlled its breathing, not breathing either. Hey, fellow, then why don't you say that it is dead? Well, if you want to call that it is dead, you can call it, but if I say dead, then my head will be off, you see. Therefore, I am saying only this much. Now, this means that the fellow is dead. So, it is like that. What are the symptoms of having the control over mind? There are some symptoms of that. So, when one has to practice that, these symptoms aid us that what should be practiced. One very important thing is equanimity. That is a sign of a controlled mind. The world, everything around will be changing fast or slow, whatever. Things are in a flux. Sometimes it is very nice, sometimes it is not that nice, sometimes it is very warm, sometimes it is very cold, sometimes you may get a check in the mail, and sometimes you may get a bill from the mail. So it is, this person is not perturbed by these odds. So we will see these verses. The seventh verse, जितात्मनः प्रशान्तस्य परमात्मा समाहितः शीतोष्णसुखदुःखेषु तथा मानापमानयोः. This self of one who is self-controlled and serene is alone poised in heat and cold, happiness and misery, as also in honor and dishonor. These things affect an ordinary person. So, in the beginning of when we started this chapter, I had mentioned this idea that many ask about how to meditate. Well, how to meditate is something that will come later. But first, how to tune your life to a meditative awareness, that is important. That sitting some time in meditation is good, but that will not be very effective unless we are ready to tune our life to that meditative awareness. That is very important. So the practice is not just for half an hour or 1 hour or whatever, but every moment the practice should go on. Whenever these opposites come in life, we should not get disturbed by these. This is a practice. Like sometimes there will be a big blow coming up. A big blow comes in some bad news. Well, we should take it with that equanimity. Yes, this is the nature of the world. Sometimes you get very elating news, but don't get elated. Because this is the nature of the world. There is high tide, there is low tide. There will be conditions when there will be a lot of economic prosperity, and there will be conditions when there will be economic downturn. That is the nature of it. The world is like that. And there will be birth and there will be death. It is, imagine, you know, that death means we feel bad. Suppose there is only birth and no death. Just give it a thought. The world would be just impossible to be in. It is, therefore, death is so much required for the world to be a livable place. If it is only birth, it won't be livable. It has to be, birth has to accompany death, then only it makes sense. So, therefore, we have to understand these things, that birth means death too. When the high tide means low tide also. This is a sign of equanimity. So, somebody gives you big honor, fine, but remember somebody is there to insult you also. So, do not get elated because somebody is giving lot of respect. Sometimes you will not get that respect, not only that, you will be insulted also. This is to be remembered, that all these things will be coming in life, and learn to keep the equanimity. That is very important. As the ideals are portrayed in the great characters that we come across in various these mythologies and the great epics like Ramayana, Mahabharata, you will notice that this equanimity is considered to be a great ideal. Tulsidas, a great sage, describes Rama, that how was that great character, that he was given the news that you will become king. Tomorrow you will be crowned as king. And that early morning, he gets the news. Not only that he is not going to become king, he has to go to forest for 14 years. And how did Rama take both these news. The description that Tulsidas gives is very beautiful. That Mukham Bhuja Shri Raghunandanasya Me Sadastu Sa Manjula Mangala Prada. In both these conditions, it was not elated when there was the news that you will become king. It remained just calm. Yes, what is there? I would become king. Doesn't make much difference. And then came the news, you will go to forest. Okay, tathana mamlau vanvasa dukkhatah. Even if there is this prospect of going to forest now for 14 years, giving up all the luxuries of the palace that one is accustomed to. It is very difficult to give up even the most ordinary things, conveniences that one is used to. That one gentleman told he has been living in this country, came from India, and living here in this country for last about 15 years. He said that I would like to go back to India. The only problem is that in my city there, I don't get running hot water as I like here. So one gets used to some these conveniences and do not want to even give up that. So remember, this fellow from the palace life is without any prior notice is just sent to forest. Equanimity. Didn't get disturbed at all. So that is the prayer, that last line that I recited, that may that face of Rama which scatters auspiciousness all the time, may that be auspicious for me. So this is the model of yoga, that no getting disturbed by these fluctuations. So next verse is also giving the similar ideas about this equanimity of mind, achieving this sameness. Jnana vijnana triptatma kutastho vijitendriyah yukta ityuchyate yogi samalloshtashma kanchanah. The yogi whose self is satisfied through knowledge and realization, who is steady and has the senses under control, and to whom a clod of earth, a stone and gold are of equal value, is said to be steadfast. That is the sign of being steadfast. This is the important aspect of this particular verse, that steadfastness. It is kutastha is that Sanskrit word for that. That the knowledge, one moment there is and not other moment, that is not really being established in yoga. When reading some nice book on spiritual wisdom, or when one is in the company of some saintly figure, some such in some serene atmosphere, then you get all the good thoughts. Now, after some time, they just seem to vanish. Especially when temptations present themselves, then all those thoughts, they just seem to have vanished. Why does this happen? Not that there is lack of information. Not that there is lack of ordinary knowledge, that, oh, these are all not real. Moreover, there is no real happiness in them. Not only that, they will create bondage. All that knowledge is here in the head, but doesn't percolate in the heart or in behavior. So, the difference in this, one lady tells many times that when she hears about this idea of cultivating dispassion and detachment in all the relations, she says, Swami, it is all right here. It makes sense here, pointing to the head, but doesn't make sense pointing to the heart. It doesn't appeal here what to do. So that is the practice, you know, yoga. It needs to percolate in the system. Like some Indian sweets they make here also, they make some sweets. And then they made like a ball of that cheese. Then to make it sweet, you have to put it in the syrup. Now if you just put it in the syrup and in 5 seconds you take out, there is some syrup sticking outside, some sugar, it will taste sweet only on the crust. But then inside it will not be eatable at all. So what has to be done? That syrup has to go into every pore there, in the every particle of cheese should get attached to that sugar. Then only it will taste sweet. So this knowledge in the head, it has to get into the heart. So our heart needs to be immersed so that it gets all that knowledge gets into our heart and illumines it. That is called vijnana. Jnana and vijnana. The experiential knowledge. Sri Ramakrishna used to give a very beautiful analogy that somebody has just heard about milk. Somebody has gone a step ahead, has seen the milk. Somebody has gone further, has drunk the milk, and thus has become healthy by having this nutritious food. So who has really understood milk? It is this third person. Some of us just hear that yes, there is God within us. Some people believe it a little bit. But those are really sages who get into actual contact with it, see that God, and make their life illumined by this realization. So, this is called vijnana, jnana and vijnana, knowledge and the wisdom that comes by getting this knowledge seeped inside the personality. The whole personality then becomes full of this knowledge, like that sweet, when you keep it in immersed in syrup for maybe 24 hours or so, then all the syrup gets soaked inside. And now the whole thing becomes sweet. So this person just expresses that knowledge in every action. Just as that sweetness of the syrup can be tasted in every particle of that sweet, similarly, this person's knowledge gets expressed in each and every action. Otherwise, only superficial, when the man is telling to others advice of great knowledge, when that person comes to practice, then none of that is available. It is all gone. It is only on the crust. So it is like advising somebody else. A fellow had a shirt, written a big letters, take my advice. Underneath it was written, I never use it. So it is that kind of teaching that yes, all knowledge outside, but nothing actually functions in life. So then what happens? The person is very intelligent, bright, a big scientist, or in many different fields is very big intellectual, can write well, can speak well, but all this knowledge, all this intellect is tied to sense enjoyments. And Sri Ramakrishna used to give that analogy that their life is like that vultures. Vultures fly high up in the skies, but their eyes are looking for where some that carrion is rotting there, some beast is dead, and they are looking for that dead beast to prey on. So, like this, their intellect soars very high, keep on discussing how the universe came into existence and all that, and whether God is one or many and all that. But the life is on a very, very superficial level, looking all the time at different sense enjoyments. Swami Ranganathananji in this book has made a very beautiful comment. I will read that. He explained this, that if the knowledge doesn't get converted into tangible experience, then what happens? And I quote from him, "Otherwise, the cerebral system becomes a slave to the sensory system. That is very unfortunate, and today that is the condition of most human beings. Their entire thinking power is controlled and directed by their sensory appetites. The senses are the masters. The human being is only a servant. The situation is just like tail wagging the dog, and most people are in that condition. The sensory system controls and directs the cerebral system. It has no independence at all. So, this becomes the condition, friends. Actually, the cerebral system should govern the sensory system. That is how they are arranged. But, no, the senses are so strong. They decide what is wanted and make the brain work for it. Brain becomes the slave. I want all these things for my pleasure. The senses demand. And the brain then starts finding out the ways to get those things. So the senses become the masters, and the cerebral system just remains a slave. Therefore, it is important that we see the cerebral system, what it determines, what is right. Now, that should be followed by the senses. The senses should come under a conscious control of the intellect. This intellect, what the intellect determines to be correct, right, that is its job. And then the yoga makes these senses follow the dictates of the intellect. And therefore, jnana and vijnana, the sensory, these things, perceptions, must get converted to follow this wisdom. That is the meaning of being vijnani. The knowledge is now converted into experience. Then, what happens in that case? Now, this person will look at the sameness in all. Not that there will be no recognition of differences. It is given here, sama loftashma kanchanaha, a clod of earth, a stone and gold are of equal value. Equal value means they are valuable in their own field. Earth is valuable. It is for the cultivation and all those purposes you require earth. The gold may be very valuable in some other respects, but you cannot put a seed on gold and think that, well, it will get sown and you will get, it will grow. You cannot cultivate it on gold. So everything has its value. This person sees that all this is pervaded by God. God or the Self alone is real. These are all different manifestations and different shapes, different colors and different their utilities in this external world. Now, all those differences are seen. Not that this person is dumb not to see the differences. Not that he will not be able to recognize what is stone and what is gold. He will be able to recognize them. But the prospect of gold will not be able to titillate him. He will not take up that gold rush-like voyage. That let me, for all those mad gold rush, so many people gave up everything that they had when they just heard the news that there is gold found somewhere in California. People came from far off places like Australia, Africa, faced lot of hardships with just the idea that they may get gold there. This person is not likely to do that. It is the stone, the earth, all these different things are there in the world. And this is, this person sees God alone is real in all these different modifications. And that is a great message to learn. And our mind gets so much ruffled by these differences. And then we say, oh, why my mind gets disturbed? I want to keep my mind calm. So this is how it can remain calm. That see that the sameness in them. That they are different manifestation of the same self. So do not get disturbed by these differences. There the differences are superficial. They are important as far as the surface goes. But go a little deeper and there is the same truth in all of them. So this is to be understood here. Then in personal relationships, we meet so many people in the world and there is, we get attached to some and we get inimical relation with some. With some we don't feel any concern at all. With some we do not come in much contact at all. So it is these differences are shown here that this the yogi is seeing the same one being in all these. That is the 9th verse. He excels who looks equally on a well-wisher, a friend, an enemy, a neutral, an arbiter, a helpful person, a relative, and also on the good and the sinful. Surin mitra ridasina madhyastha dvesha bandhushu sadhushva picha papeshu samabuddhir vishishyate. This person excels, vishishyate, excels. Other person, people, they get caught into these different manifestations. This person, although notices these differences, understands that these differences are superficial. What are these suran? Some people he sees a well-wisher. He wishes you well, it is very good. Surat means whose heart is good. He wishes well for to everyone. Rit means heart, Su means good, Surat. So this person is a well-wisher of everybody. So there are people like that in the world. Then Mitra. Then there are those which are friendly to you, but may not be friendly to everyone. He is a friend to you. Maybe his relation to your enemy also, because his friend to you will be enemy to your enemy also. So therefore, the person who is friend to you is not necessarily friend to everyone. Then there is also an enemy. Yeah, you are connected with somebody as enemy. Then a neutral, that person, okay, fine, it is, I don't want to get involved in any of these things. Somebody gets involved as arbiter. Yes, okay, I will be the, I will mediate between you two. You are quarreling, but I will take the position of a mediator. I will resolve the conflict between you. So there are some like that. Then there are some others who are very good people, and some are very sinful people, bad people. So this person sees all these differences, but knows that these differences are superficial. They change. They change. Like somebody may be a well-wisher, but then gets a blow in life or something happens and then starts cursing others. Sometimes it happens that somebody is very close friend to you, but then there is some conflicting issue and that makes them turn into enemies. Somebody may be enemy today, but then for some common cause, they can become friends. So this person sees all these changes and sees that, well, the same one self is in all of them, manifesting differently in different situations. Like you see in the movie, there is somebody who is a good person, somebody is a hero, somebody is a heroine, somebody is a mediator. Suppose all these people are there in the movie. Now they are different, but if you look back, it is the same light, is it not? The same light becomes a good person as well as bad person. Same light becomes hero as well as villain. It is all that same light becomes heaven as well as hell. And the same light became Jesus as well as those who were crucifying him. It is the same one light. Is it not, Triveni? Yes. So, it is the same one being that appears differently. And this person, yogi, who is trying to see that one, is therefore not ruffled by these. It is very important to understand this in our interpersonal relations, because they become very big agitating factor in our life. That person may be good or bad for others, but for you, if that person doesn't do what you want him or her to do, then your mind becomes agitated. If you have some kind of relation, that person may be good to some others, but is your boss, and then is always asking you to do this and that, and is scolding you for not doing it and all that, then that makes you agitated. Now, And therefore, it is important to see that all these different people will be there in the world. They are different manifestations. Just as this is one manifestation, that is another manifestation. They all change. They all keep on changing. And therefore, the yogi sees the essence. In essence, they are all same. Every saint had a past when that fellow was not a saint. And every sinner will have in future will change to be a saint. So the saint is also a covering. Sinner is another covering. So these are all different coverings. This yogi is therefore tuned not to the appearances, but to the essence. The appearances, howsoever beautiful, they are appearances. Howsoever bad, yet they are appearances. So, this is a training that one has to give to the mind. Otherwise, see what happens practically in our day-to-day relationships in the world. Somebody says a bad word to me. Then I determine then and there, I am not going to see the face of that man in my whole life. Oh my goodness. It is just that fellow said something, maybe in some, he was in some other condition and so said like that. But does it mean that you should get agitated like that? And who loses if you get agitated? It is you who have lost your temper, not something worth losing, you say. So, it is, why should you lose sleep if somebody says bad word to you? Now, forget it. If somebody says some nice words to you, again, forget it, you know. It is, that also is important. Otherwise, we remember, it is difficult to, if somebody says, Swami, wow, your talks are so nice. Hey, I feel okay. It is, again, that is also, it should be just passed on, because people's opinions keep on changing. My relationship should not be based on those appearances. That is, appearances, when we give more importance to appearances, we get cheated in the world. Do we buy the things by looking at the appearances or what is inside them? Some of my friends, they do very right thing. Before eating, I only see how their taste is. I get swayed by the appearance. But some are very conscientious. They look what is the content, you know, how many calories and how much cholesterol and all that. They look at the actual content and eat accordingly. So they are wiser people, you know, they do not go by appearances. So we should learn to, in life, to give more importance to what is inside, rather than the appearances. Whether the appearances are pleasant or not pleasant, doesn't matter. So, in our interpersonal relationships, there is lot of scope to practice it. Day to day we can practice, moment to moment we can practice Vedanta like this, that there are so many occasions. Everywhere when we are in company with somebody, let us put this idea into practice, that this is the same self that here and there, not different. Appearances are different, that's all. So, this person sees this sameness. Now, this gives rise to a question, that what then, how can we treat all those evil people, bad people, how can we treat them same as good people? Don't treat them as same. It is not meant like that. That therefore there is a saint is same as sinner, so why should I go for the company of saints? Let me as well go for the company of sinner. That is not the idea. They, at the level, superficial level, when it is you are dealing at that level, remember that you are dealing only at that level. So go to the saint. But the purpose should be not to judge that saintliness or whatever, but to get our own self illumined by that saintliness. When we come across a sinner, we have to be careful, cautious. But let us not condemn that person. Let us remember that that person has also equal potential to become a saint. So it is that kind of attitude must be developed, that somebody may not be a good person today, but yes, there is the same God in that. There is absolutely no doubt about that. So this idea must be kept in mind, borne in mind, and should not judge somebody permanently. Oh, that person is like that, is not never going to change. No, only Brahman or God never changes. Everything else changes. So, let us not form the permanent conclusions on the basis of temporary appearances. So, this is how the yogi develops. So these are all beautiful indications that how we can gradually change our understanding and tune it more to the yoga understanding. Then this practice, next verse emphasizes that practice. Every moment we should try to be in this. Till this verse, the signs of a perfect person were shown so that we can practice according to our capacity. Now that aspect is emphasized, that you should practice according to your capacity to remain in that awareness to the extent you can. That is the 10th verse. Yogi yunjit satatam atmanam rahasi sthitah ekaki yat chittatma nirashihi aparigraha. The yogi with his mind and self subjugated, free from desire, destitute and living alone in solitudes, should constantly concentrate his mind. Of course, his means hers also, not that it is told specifically to men. And it is for everyone. The yogi means here it should be understood as the one who wants to become a perfected person. And not already perfected, but is on that path. When you are on the right path, you are as good as reached. You know, if the path is right, and then it is only the accident that will prevent you from getting there. So, if you are on the right path, you are almost there. So, therefore, being on the path is shown here, that what this yogi does is that life is woven around this ideal, that satatam, that always is thinking about this ideal. Atmanam rahasi sthitah, always tries to be established in the self. So, that underlying awareness is always present. And Sri Ramakrishna used to give that example of toothache. If there is a toothache, then all you may be doing many other things, but you are always aware of the aching tooth. Always that awareness is there at a sublime level. It is always there that the tooth is giving lot of pain there. It is, you do other things like you may be giving a talk, you may be eating, you may be sleeping, but yet that toothache is always being felt. So similarly, this person while doing everything, all the time, satatam, is thinking about self. The life is woven around it. That is, one Swami was asked in that, well, can you teach us transcendental meditation? And that Swami was a little humorous. He said, no, I don't know much about transcendental meditation, but I can tell you about dental meditation. So, this is dental meditation. That the toothache, so concentrate just as it is. Your mind is always on that. So let the mind be, whatever you are doing, always it should be tied to this ideal. So, and what are that those characteristics? That the attempt to control yata cittatma. That there are tendencies to make those senses will try to run away. And whenever they make an attempt to run away, this person tries to control. Hold it, hold it. One lady, she had decided not to eat sugars or anything for some time. And then one could see, I would offer her sweets, would you take? And then her eyes would look at that and would say, no. And you could see that the mind was going there, but she was checking it. Bring it back. No, not now. No, please don't. I will not take it. So, that is a practice, that the senses will try to go towards the objects. Now this non-yogis, they will let it go, okay. But the one who wants to become yogi, then pulls it back. No, it wants to go, but I will not let it go. Like you that take a dog walking on the street with the on the leash, the dog will try to pull you somewhere, but you don't just follow the dog wherever the dog wants to go. You pull the leash and take the dog on the path that you want to take. So it is like that. The mind behaves like that and wants to go here, there, everywhere. Pull it. No, I won't let you go. So this person is doing it all the time, and nirashi does not keep on looking to the world with that idea of that lot of expectation. Tomorrow there will be a jackpot there for me, and there will be a big job there waiting for me. Then I will get a good husband or a good wife and all that. Or hoping, this will happen, that will happen. So this person doesn't do that. This is just look at our minds, people keep on daydreaming. So much time and mental energy is wasted in that. That, oh, so this will happen, and if this happens, then this will happen. Then I will do like this, and then I will do like that. By the time, in 10 minutes, they have already made plans for another next 50 years. So it is this person does not let the mental energy get wasted like that. And that ekaki tries to be alone. Ekaki doesn't mean that the person remains in the shut doors, but does not get unnecessarily involved with people around. It is because you are practicing some ideal this thing for your good in life. So you do not want to be mixing with everybody for nothing. It is that socialization and going to all the parties in the world and then arranging parties at your home and all that this person is not interested in. People may say all those things about him, that he is like that. Let them say. It is because this person wants to be a yogi. Many times people say, yes, we want to do spiritual practice, but what to do? You know, those our relatives will then feel offended if we come to meditation. Okay, then that means your relatives getting offended is more important to you than realizing the goal of life. Are those your relatives giving you God realization? If not, then why worry about it? This person knows that people will say good or bad things anyway about you. Don't bother about it. Even if you try to go to every party, yet people will say some bad things about you. So don't worry about it. Just follow the path of ideal. And we shall continue this discussion. From next verse we'll begin the details of practice. The details are important only if these principles are understood. So, next verse will tell how should we sit, what should be the place for meditation, and so forth. But the attitude for meditation is this. Then only the meditation will be useful. We shall try to discuss these things next Friday. Any questions? Yes, Charles?
You say that we're all responsible for ourselves, and yet Sri Ramakrishna told Girish Ghosh that he would accept his power of attorney. And I've also heard of gurus who take on the problems of their disciples. So how does that work?
Yeah, you should be responsibly giving it to the guru or somebody, is it not? It is. See how what happened to Girish Ghosh. You have given a very nice example that, and there is a very nice description in Sri Ramakrishna and his divine play about this, that what happened when Girish gave the power of attorney to Sri Ramakrishna. Every moment now he has to think, he has to act very conscientiously every moment. So, it is with responsibility he had given his responsibility to Sri Ramakrishna. His act of giving responsibility to Sri Ramakrishna was a very responsible act. If it is not done like that, Sardananda Swamiji writes there in that nobody takes your power of attorney. So many people would say, oh, I give power of attorney to Sri Ramakrishna or any guru or anybody. Has it been really responsibly given? Then it will be taken up, but not otherwise. So that is the answer for that.
And then when you realize you're not the doer, then do you give up responsibility?
When you realize you are not the doer, then all this is not required for you. When you know that you are not doer, God alone is the doer, then all spiritual practice has culminated for you. So you don't then need to read Bhagavad Gita, you know. So, so let us conclude with the closing prayers. गीता सुगीता कर्तव्या किमन्यत् शास्त्रविस्तरैः या स्वयं पद्मनाभस्य मुखपद्माद्विनिसृता Ekam Shastram Devaki Putra Gitam Eko Devo Devaki Putra Eva Eko Mantrah Tasya Namaniyane Karmapyekam Tasya Devasya Seva Shri Krishna